It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 118 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:45, where are we at in society? Well, castration clubs are apparently a thing. And is Victoria's Secret about to return to a pre-DEI mindset? At 6:15, it is the first of two segments with Justin Wells of Inside Texas, talking Longhorn football and more. And in mere seconds, we need to talk about the NCAA's attempt to force a settlement in their antitrust lawsuits by probably just creating numbers out of thin air. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at CourtesyWave. And do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. Well, today is a football holiday of sorts, I guess. We do have the NFL releasing its full schedule for the 2024 season coming up here in just a little bit. We have had some info trickle out on games that people can expect this season, and in some cases over the next couple of years, as well as the team that is being showcased in this year's HBO Hard Knocks. That would be the New York Giants. As far as some of the tidbits that we do have so far, about Jets 49ers on Monday Night Football in week one, should be an intriguing matchup. And we also know that in week two, we get Bills, Dolphins, and Bengals, Chiefs. So if that doesn't get you excited for some Monday Night Football this year, I don't know what will. We also know that Jets, Vikings are going to be played in London. Heavy on the Jets so far. That's not surprising. And then maybe the biggest piece of news that is more off the field, I guess, more how you will be watching certain games over the next couple of seasons. Netflix is now in the live NFL streaming game. They will be carrying a Christmas Day game each of the next two seasons. And that does, in fact, include two this Christmas. And you know what? Just rereading the story right now, it looks like 2026, they will also have a game as well. Now, that may rankle some people, but this is not nearly as bad as a game happening on the NBC app, which very few people have. I don't fault NBC for wanting to push people to their streaming service. We all have Netflix, though. That's not nearly as big of a deal. So you're just going to have to go from your standard channels, which may very well be through YouTube TV like ours are here in my household, to Netflix, which is much easier than downloading the NBC app, feigning a subscription. You pay for the subscription, you get your refund right afterwards just so you can watch that one NFL game or those handful of NFL games as it now stands. We may have more on the NFL schedule release tomorrow because I did want to spend some time talking about a story that I believe came out yesterday from Ross Dellinger, who does a great job covering college football and especially the business of college football for Yahoo Sports. According to Dellinger's article, which summarizes a letter going around from the NCAA to member institutions, if there is a settlement not reached in their current antitrust lawsuits involving former college athletes who are suing the NCAA and its member institutions for not allowing them to profit off of name, image, and likeness before that rule is put into effect in 2021. As we talked about last week, the possibility of a settlement does have to do with nearly $3 billion being paid out. But according to this letter being passed around that was summarized by Ross Dellinger, if that doesn't happen, the NCAA And the schools who are also having to pay in here could be on the hook for $20 billion in damages and may have to file for bankruptcy if that's what it comes down to. $20 billion? Where is that number coming from, NCAA? Just making stuff up out of thin air? Are you suggesting that the fabric of college sports will be completely ruined if you don't get this settlement and likely federal protection from future lawsuits, which isn't guaranteed either, by the way, and that is mentioned in the letter, credit to the letter, I should say. But $20 billion and having to file for bankruptcy. I guess it's possible, but I also don't buy the validity of that. See, the NCAA has been making the ruining the fabric of college sports argument for far too long, even though many of the things that they were suggesting being brought above board would, in fact, ruin college sports, and it hasn't happened just yet. Have things like NIL changed the game? And opening the transfer portal wide open, which, by the way, I wasn't necessarily a fan of, but that's the NCAA's attempt to deal with the problem by not dealing with it at all. And now they are subjectively trying to reinforce those 2+ time transfer rules that they were letting everybody get away with up until this most recent athletic calendar year. It's a very tricky situation for the NCAA and the Power Five schools who are going to be on the hook for whatever the settlement is that's reached. But here's my prediction. That if it does come down to anybody having to file for bankruptcy, the onus is going to fall on the NCAA. And that probably kills that organization for good. And we as college sports fans are probably better off with that too, by the way. They may very well settle. Perhaps this letter scares everybody into thinking that, yeah, we just need to go ahead and sign up for the fact that we need to pay $30 million a year, so $300 million as schools, to get this to go away and to not have to worry about it in the future versus something more catastrophic that might require us to just file for bankruptcy. Or you could call the NCAA's bluff here. Because they're the one coming up with these numbers, these predictions, and say, you know what, NCAA? Let's see about this. Because ultimately, we feel like you are the most on the hook for this. And we can let you serve as the fall guy, and you can finally show your worth to us as the schools that you represent. In this letter that Ross Dellinger does summarize, the NCAA does talk about having to withhold funds that are otherwise going to its member schools annually over the next decade again. It also does very subtly get into the idea of Title IX and how that will be affected by schools being able to provide full scholarships for all of its programs, not just the major programs. And does sound like they don't know how that's going to affect Title IX. It is a case-by-case basis, if anything. Now, this document that was sent around to presidents and athletic directors admits that the settlement isn't even a perfect solution, that it does create other questions. I just don't know how schools in the ACC and Big 12, who are slated to get $30 million per year in their college football TV deals and are being told that they are going to have to spend $30 million per year for a decade just to help pay back the nearly $3 billion owed to former college athletes, how that's going to jive. Oh, as they're also trying to stay competitive with schools in the SEC and Big Ten who are making significantly more than that on their football TV rights deals. Look, this story is not going to go away. We will certainly get into it later in the week. I may even get a guest on to help talk about it as well. Coming up next, need to shift gears slightly. Still going to talk college sports and college football, just with Justin Wells of Inside Texas. That's up next here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Ellie.
It is a Wednesday, which means I get to spend a couple of segments with Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. You can follow him on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show, typically on Wednesdays for a couple of segments. Justin, thank you as always for the time. How you doing today?
Hey, now, you know, it's getting hot outside, Trey. And I know sometimes we like to do these little weather updates and weather reports, but it was 92 at the Chapel Hill spring game earlier with a nice coat of humidity. So welcome to the summer. We're here, and I don't know if it's going to let up anymore, my man.
Where did you say you were? Chapel Hill?
Yeah, Tyler, Texas, Chapel Hill, running back Ricky Stewart, committed to the class of 2025 for the Longhorns. We've got some really bad weather coming for the next few days, so a lot of these schools pushed up their spring games.
Gotcha.
If you look outside, it's beautiful. Like sunny, no clouds. I mean, it's perfect. And then you walk outside, and then you're out there for 5 or 10 minutes, and you're cooking. And yeah, just reminds you that we're in Texas, and it's mid-May.
Well, plus, you guys in East Texas, people think that the humidity is reserved for the Gulf Coast and Houston and up to College Station. Y'all have your own brand of humidity that makes 92 feel much more miserable, too.
No, it does. It's not Houston humidity. It's not South Louisiana humidity. I don't really know where it comes from. Maybe from the boats in Shreveport. I'm not sure, but that's a fact. Humidity exists in East Texas, and I think it's one reason it turns a lot of these players into dogs.
Yeah,
because you have to be some level of tough to get through a lot of these practices and wait till the summertime when they come back for workouts and preseason stuff. It just gets hotter and hotter. It's not so bad at 92, but then when you add 60, 70, 80% humidity, you start to melt. It's only natural.
Yeah, and I think back to, gosh, this was several years ago now. This is around the time that you and I first started having these conversations. You popularized the hashtag Beast Texas, where it was, I think, a lowercase b, capital E-A-S-T, Texas. And it does feel like they build them just a little bit different out there. They have that hungry dog in them. It's probably partially the small town effect and partially just the conditions that you're having to survive in day to day out, too.
It is. I mean, these are just tough kids. You know, they don't get the exposure of Dallas and Houston area guys, or even Central Texas for that matter. And I think they keep that chip on their shoulder. They've got a work ethic about them. They don't really complain. You don't have a lot of, you know, drama when it comes to the recruits in this area for the most part. You know, there's always outliers, obviously, especially in the last cycle with one in particular. But for the most part, these are just hard-nosed kids. And what's funny is over the years, I've gotten to know a lot of college coaches really well. And I've always, you know, they'll always ask me about kids in this area. And now their mindset is, you know, I think we need to take one or two each cycle in each class. Like, they're good for the locker room. They're good because they're good examples to other players and other teammates. And here's another thing. Everybody is prone to hit the transfer portal, but you're not going to see very many East Texas kids hit the transfer portal. It's really just not in the way they think. It's not in their mindset. Huh. They're taught, be grateful, work hard, get the opportunity, shut up, keep your head down, and go to work. And I think that's why you see so many of these guys in this area that do make it. They make it big in college, and they make it big in the NFL. And there's just a toughness here. They don't get the same perks and exposure of the big cities. And I think they don't take it for granted. When colleges come through, they're gracious because they understand that's an opportunity for them to get out. What? And for them to produce somewhere or have a future, you know, outside of East Texas. And so, yeah, man, they're just built a little different in this area. There's a toughness, a chip on your shoulder that they all carry. I saw Ricky Stewart today. I mean, Ricky barely wanted to do an interview, and not because he's not a great kid, because he lost the spring game. They split up the teams, the blue and gold, and his team wind up being the losing team. And you might think it's a spring game. It's a team-oriented thing. Not that big a deal. Bullcorn. Ricky was not happy. He did not want to talk to anybody. And that's the competitive nature I see so often in these East Texas kids.
Yeah, it's interesting what you said about them being good locker room guys, too. And this isn't exclusive to East Texas. This is probably more of a small town thing. Like, there's an inherent sense of courtesy and manners that exists with a lot of small town kids. It isn't necessarily as apparent with kids that come from a bigger city. And that's not to say that all kids from Dallas or Houston right. or the Austin area are just rude a-holes, but it feels like it is more consistent when you talk about these kids coming from smaller communities. Now, look, Tyler and Longview have gotten pretty big over time, but it's still small potatoes as compared to their neighbors a couple of hours away in the DFW area.
It is. And these are just tough-nosed kids. I mean, you go to Longview High School, and those kids are tough. You go to Carthage, those kids are tough. You go to Chapel Hill, those kids are tough. You go to Kilgore, you go to West Rusk, you go to Gilmer, you go to Texas High, you go to Pleasant Grove, you go to Liberty Ilo. I mean, there are just tough-minded, tough-nosed kids. Timpson, Texas, tough-minded kids. And there's a camaraderie because I think a lot of these kids don't have two-parent homes. Mm. And so in a lot of cases, the coach is their father figure. And the players on the team are their family. They're their brothers. And so I think that's why you see a little bit more close-knit when these guys go off to college. They look for like-minded people that kind of come up the same way. And I think that's why you see these guys, once they get out and get an opportunity, become highly successful.
East Texas kids have their own personality. Golden Triangle kids also have their own unique personality. Yeah. And Texas just landed another kid from the Golden Triangle over the weekend. What do Longhorn fans need to know about offensive lineman Jackson Christian?
He is meaner than a pit bull. He comes from PNG, the Fighting Rashawn Johnsons. Great program that has put some guys, some dudes on the map for years. Made a state championship run last year under Coach Joseph. You know, they're doing a lot of good things. Christian is a guy that I think could play guard, but I also think has some tackle ability. And if you want to get really versatile, he may have some center ability, even though I think that Daniel Cruz from the last cycle is going to be kind of the guy for that spot right now. But he chose Texas over Texas A&M. This was going to be an in-state battle. 6'3 and a half, 6'4, about 300 pounds, just really mean. I saw him for the first time in the state championship 2 years ago when they came up a little short. Saw him again last year. One of the pillars of that offensive front that really, really helped the Indians go. This is a good get for Texas because they've got such a good offensive line and they've got such a good culture in that room. And they've been developing. You know, Kyle Flood showed what he can do with a Christian Jones to get him to the next level. And then you're about to see a Kelvin Banks and a DJ Campbell get drafted. And then you're going to have prospects like a Cam Williams and a Cole Hudson and a Brandon Baker and a Trevor Goosby. And so for Christian, he's joining a group that they're just playing at a high level right now. If you'll notice, Texas isn't hitting the portal for offensive linemen. Flood really likes to get them in high school and develop them. The no bad habits, and Christian's just solid as a rock. He can do a little bit of everything. He's good in run block. He's good in pass block. And he's ultimate team guy with a state championship pedigree, you know, in his hand. And so I think this is a really good get. He had talked about maybe a June, July decision, but we had heard in the last few weeks that he was getting close to pulling the trigger. And Monday night at about 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, he went ahead and did it.
You split the difference between Tyler and the Golden Triangle, and you may find yourself in Lufkin, which is where one of the most sought-after recruits and defensive linemen in the state and the entire country is located. What's the latest on Zion Williams? I saw that you posted an update on the message board earlier today. What should we know about that one?
Yeah, you need to definitely come to InsideTexas.com and check it out. I went to hang out with Zion and the Lufkin coaches yesterday afternoon. They had moved their spring game up a little bit as well. They've got baseball, playoff baseball on the horizon. They've got bad weather coming too. I got to tell you, the weather was perfect. Nice little breeze, not too humid. It just felt really nice at A. Martin Stadium. And you know what? The biggest hearted kid in the town is Zion Williams. I mean, you're not going to find a sweeter individual. I mean, he really – 6'5", 320, he's a giant teddy bear off the field. On the field, he just moves people. He's just big, strong, and athletic, and he's starting – the light's starting to click for this guy. He's starting to realize how dominant he can be, but really he's realizing how much football can help his family. Because you're talking about a kid with 11 brothers and sisters. You're talking about a kid that really has to work hard to make sure not only school and football are taken care of, but his family, his mom and his brothers and sisters are taken care of. Texas and LSU are going to be the two schools. This is what it's going to come down to. Look, he's got official visits. He's going to see Arkansas. He's already taken an official to TCU, where his cousin, Jamarcus McFarland, is the D-line coach in Fort Worth. He's got an official visit to Texas A&M that he told me he's going to take some of his teammates with him on his official to hopefully get them a little bit of exposure and show them what it's like going through the recruiting process. And then he said he's saving his last OV for Texas. That's going to be June 21st to the 23rd. LSU's is coming up. I believe that's going to be the last weekend in May, so that one's going to be a big one because Bo Davis built the best relationship with Zion when he was at Texas, and he carried that over to Baton Rouge and LSU, and I think that's why LSU looks so good in this recruitment. But Kenny Baker went by Lufkin today, the Texas D-line coach. He continues to build that bond and connection with Williams.
Good to know. He is Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, and the Inside Texas YouTube channel. You can give him a follow on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show, typically on Wednesdays for a couple of segments. Coming up, it is segment two with Justin here on the other side on Sports Day Plus on 1027 ESPN and 1027ESPN.com.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with Justin Wells of Inside Texas. After, I remind you that if you missed the first part of this conversation or any of Sports Day Plus and want to go back and listen commercial free, you can do so at 1027ESPN.com. Just click on the shows tab at the top of the page, find Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling, and you have access to a playlist from Apple Podcasts that has all of my previous shows commercial free. Hopefully they're labeled well enough for you to know where you need to get to, whether that's my chat with Justin on Wednesdays, my Tuesdays with Kevin Dunn, or any of the other interviews or topics that I talk about throughout the week. And I do have another really fun conversation coming up tomorrow with comedian and actor TJ Miller. You know him from Silicon Valley and Deadpool 2, as well as Office Christmas Party. He's going to be at Creek in the Cave Friday and Saturday performing stand-up. I'll talk with TJ for a couple of segments tomorrow. Back to my conversation with Justin, though, of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, that Inside Texas YouTube channel. And Justin, you did say you had one more thing to discuss with regards to Lufkin defensive line prospect Zion Williams.
Every recruit, it comes down a lot of times to relationships. But with Zion in particular, he is very relationship-based. I mean, this is a guy that's playing in his last spring game, going through his last spring ball at Lufkin. He's getting sentimental. He was wanting to get emotional about it. Then he found out his D-line coach is about to get another job and head to Houston. And so there's a lot of stuff going on with him. But ultimately, he wants to make a decision before his senior year. He's made a promise that he is going to decide more likely in July and August. It's going to come down to Texas and LSU. He can't lose. It's a win-win for him wherever he picks. But, you know, like I said, I've done this a long time, and he's just such a good person, a good kid. He reminds me a lot of Brandon Jones, who was from Nacogdoches in the mid-2010s, played at Texas, now plays in the NFL with the Denver Broncos. Just a really engaging personality. He cares what you think about him. A lot of these four stars and five stars, they don't really care. And there's nothing wrong with that. They're confident in themselves. But Zion's a people pleaser, and he really cares what people think. And so, you know, this is going to be a recruitment where you got to win. This is a must win for Texas, a must win. It's actually probably a must win for LSU as well. Both need D linemen in this cycle. And you can make a case every program needs it, but especially these two. you know, in SEC territory, they need to build around that defensive line. And Zion, they understand how important Zion is. And I think that's why Texas came back to Lufkin today and Kenny Baker swung back by to catch up with him. And go to InsideTexas.com for the latest on that interview. Zion's just a wonderful, delightful kid who is just now realizing just what he has ahead of him. And he's still so gracious and so humble. You want to talk about a good locker room kid? You get this guy in the right culture, he is going to thrive.
Random question, but is Lufkin technically considered part of East Texas too?
Hell yes.
Okay, all right. You know, I didn't want to step on any toes there. I didn't want to steal him away from Brazos County or something. I know how territorial we get with these things.
I'll tell you with Lufkin is, when you go to Lufkin, you ask that question, you only ask it once. and you get the answer. You ask those kids, you ask those players. And listen, you were right. The Golden Triangle's got another kind of athlete down there. They got some animals.
Yeah.
They got some dogs that just get after it and pee in the neighbor's yard and eat out of a can of Alpo. But if you go to Lufkin, buddy, I'm telling you right now, that is East Texas. Piney woods, the curtain, the humidity. It's there, my man. I'll never forget when they did a realignment back in the early 2000s, and they sent Lufkin down to North Houston's district with Spring and the Woodlands and Conroe. And I had moved to Houston that same year, and I was talking to a few buddies about, I mean, you see Lufkin's in the district now. And they said, yeah, that's just a smaller team from up in East Texas. I said, guys, I don't think you quite realize what you're about to jump into. They were the 2001 state champions. Reggie McNeil at quarterback, Dez Bryant at wide receiver, like Jaborski Lane. They were East Texas through and through. They beat the crap out of those Houston schools for those 2 years. That way the next realignment came up, and those schools wanted nothing to do with Lufkin, and they made sure that they sent them back up to a district in East Texas.
North Houston, that is absurd. I'm just looking at the map right now. It is nowhere near Houston.
Well, that's UIL for you.
Yeah.
That is UIL through and through. I mean, they do their best. I get it. But this realignment every 2 years, sometimes you see some spots that you just shake your head. And, yeah, they thought, yeah, we'll put Houston down there with Livingston and Huntsville and those schools. And after 2 years, none of those places wanted anything to do with Lufkin. So they sent them back up to East Texas.
I assume because you said Zion is going to be visiting Texas last. Last is typically the best position for a school recruiting a kid, correct? Especially if he's planning on making a decision in the not-too-distant future after that.
Absolutely. For a high school recruit, you want to get the last OV. For a portal recruit or prospect, you want the first one.
Huh.
You want that first opportunity to make an offer and to shut it down and to close it up. But for recruiting in high school, you want that last OV because you're going to get that final pitch. And you'll be able to match anything these other schools have put in front of the prospect. You'll be able to counter anything that LSU or A&M or TCU or Arkansas or Alabama, you know, throw in the mix. And so Texas getting the last OV, look, I think LSU might be the silent leader there. I really do because Bo Davis really did build a great relationship with him dating back to Texas. That's when it started. If Bo Davis was still in Austin, Zion Williams is probably already committed to Texas. It was that close. And so I think it's going to be interesting how that plays out because Texas wanted to for sure get the last OV. And Zion told me last night that's exactly what they're getting.
Hey, speaking of Bo Davis, Justin, his replacement, Kenny Baker, by all accounts, is a great technician as a defensive line coach. But the question was, how is he going to be as a recruiter? He's going to have all the resources here at Texas. And certainly this isn't a story that is completely written up to this point. But how has Kenny Baker been as a recruiter for the Longhorns?
You know, we get that question almost every day at InsideTexas.com. You guys come and see us, please. It really is a great time and a great community. I kind of defer to this is his transition.
Yeah.
And he's been on the job, what, almost 4 months? And I don't think there's any way possible to determine how well he's done. He's had to catch up. He's had to come from behind in a lot of these recruitments. He joined Texas when they already had a defensive line commitment that he had never met. Brandon Brown out of Oogalle High School down in Melbourne, Florida. And so Kenny's just playing catch up right now. And don't forget, these guys have their own guys they like. And so when they go through the big board and they have their recruiting meetings, you know, he's looking for guys that he knows that he's familiar with, but he's also trying to learn about the new guys in the area. Because coming from Western Kentucky and then the Miami Dolphins to Texas, I don't know if he's ever had the resources that he's got now to recruit with. I don't think he fully understands walking into a school or a coach's office in Texas with a Texas Longhorn shirt and logo on really opens a lot of doors.
Yeah.
Really gets a lot of people's attention. So Coach Baker's figuring that out. It remains to be seen how this class is going to be played out. You know, we'll judge him after this season and after this initial signing class and who he is able to get and who he might, you know, miss out on. I think that would be a better margin. I know a lot of fans kind of want to give him a hard time right now, but just understand Kenny's a very personable guy. And Zion even admitted he loved talking to Coach Baker about non-football stuff. That was so important to him, talking about the non-football side of life. And Kenny's learning that about Zion, and he's learning that about a lot of these guys. And so give him some time. I know fans are wanting to be a little short with him, but he's been on the job barely 4 months. He's made a pretty good impression on the D-line room on campus already. I think that's important. And if he can get Zion Williams in the fold later this summer after a really good official visit and a head-to-head win over LSU, nobody's going to be complaining about Kenny Baker any longer.
All right, last question now, Justin, because Longhorn men's basketball now knows their 24-25 schedule. It does include one scheduled matchup with Chris Beard. Of course, they can meet in the postseason tournament when it's all said and done. But Texas does travel to Ole Miss this year. You would assume that Ole Miss makes that return trip the following season. What sort of response do you think Chris Beard gets from Longhorn fans when he does finally return to Austin as the coach of another sideline?
I have no idea. I was talking to a buddy that actually works at Ole Miss last night about this. And, you know, he asked me, would it be similar to, you know, Rick Barnes coming back?
No.
And I said, probably not. I said, Rick Barnes really endeared himself to Texas fans, and he had a lot of success. And so, and he's a likable person, you know, great personality. He recruited and developed two Naismith Player of the Year candidates in Austin. I don't think Beard was in Austin long enough. If he had been on the staff, you know, been the head coach a couple of years, and they had made a few deep runs, you may have seen some animated fans at the Moody when he comes back, but I just don't think there was enough of a sample size for fans to really have an opinion outside of the reason he was fired. And I think in a lot of people's minds, they've probably forgotten that portion right now. So that's a good question, Trey. My answer, I really don't know how they'll do it.
Sometimes the best answer is I don't know. A guy who typically has all the answers, even if that does mean having to say I don't know, is Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com and the Inside Texas YouTube channel. You can give him a follow on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show typically on Wednesdays for a couple of segments. Justin, thank you as always for the time, my friend.
Hey, my man, nothing but love.
Coming up in Where Are We At in Society, castration clubs are apparently a thing. A guy is now going to jail as a result of one.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of today's show means it's time for
Where Are We At in Society Today?
That's right. It is your regular look at stories that show we as a people are headed in a wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out. But sadly, today is not that day. And I need to forewarn you on this next story before I get to it, because it is grotesque. So if you have sensitive ears, or maybe there's sensitive ears in your car as you're driving around right now, or as you're listening in your home, which my goodness, if you're listening in your home, first of all, thank you. I am honored. Secondly, if you have a family, maybe go spend some time with them, because you're going to feel worse about yourself and worse about society listening to this next story. Headline: Castration Club's alleged ringleader who made testicular salad sentenced to 22 years in prison. That's right. There is something on this planet called a castration club. A club where people get together and castrate is my guess. I don't know. Let's see the details. We go to Great Britain, the mother country for this one, where the alleged ringleader of a body modification club. There you go. It is a club for people that like to modify their bodies in all sorts of ways that many of us don't understand. But the alleged ringleader of a body modification club responsible for the castrations of nearly 60 men will spend at least the next 22 years behind bars. The guy's name is Marius Gustafsson. He's 46. Hey, that's my age. He's from Norway, and he earned close to $250,000 through his website, Eunuch Maker. Eunuch Maker. Like the character in Game of Thrones, who's like a Ken doll down there because he no longer has his bits and pieces. Eunuch Maker. The subscriber-only site featured footage of actual castrations of group members. Again, this is a club here. It is people who are signing up for this service, signing up to be a member of the club, and eventually to lose their figurative club as a result. Gustafsson pleaded guilty to 5 counts of causing grievous bodily harm with intent and given 22 years in prison. Many members of the castration club had their healthy body parts, typically, yep, the Franks and beans, removed surgically. Actually, I said Franks and beans. I guess just the word that I'm seeing here on the screen implies just the beans. Others damaged their own beans to such a degree that doctors had to amputate. Boy, whenever I hear the word amputate, I think arm or leg. And now I'm going to have to think about that as well, but I guess that is the medical term, isn't it? The group's faithful dubbed themselves as Nullos, which is short for genital nullification. Nullos. Why not go geno-nullos? So that people really understand what it is that you're talking about. In court, prosecutors said that Gustafsson kept the lopped off body parts for consumption later on. I've been a part of a calf fry in Lubbock, Texas many years ago that involved, well, yeah, Rocky Mountain oysters, which are the testicles of cattle. I'm not proud of this, but the curious foodie in me, even back then before I would have considered myself a foodie, did need to know. And it tastes like, I don't know. I guess it did have a little bit of an oyster feel to it, albeit deep fried. It was fine. Not something that I'm seeking out necessarily, but I went there. Would I go there for this? No, absolutely not. But there are plenty of people, Gustafsson specifically, who would. He once cooked up some beans for lunch, laying them out as part of a, quote, artfully arranged salad platter. The court learned. Gustafsson also admitted to freezing a man's leg so severely that it had to be medically removed. Okay, this guy is just, he's a cannibal. That's what's going on here. And he must have some serious persuasive powers. He must have like a Koreshian-like presence about him to get some real numbskulls to go along with this garbage. Or nullos, as they were. Gustafsson, look, the guy does walk the walk or roll the roll, if you will, because he does use a wheelchair due to his own amputation. He amputated himself. Told the Irish Independent newspaper in an interview a couple of Februaries ago that he willingly had his leg, his frank, and part of his nipple removed by the group because he wanted to look like a Ken doll down there. This may be a new low for where are we at in society, because typically the stories that I talk about involve human stupidity, but not human stupidity to this level. And look, Gustafson, I guess credit to you for being the leader of this sickness. That's the only credit you're getting, by the way. And it's a very small bit of credit because this story is disgusting top to bottom. And I think this is the low water mark for this segment. Hopefully it's all up from here. Like, nothing else I am going to bring you today is going to come close to making you feel worse about where we're headed as a people than a castration club where people are joining knowing that they are going to be turned into eunuchs, knowing that they're going to be turned into Ken dolls, just like the founder himself, who also likes making, well, a very unique version of a bean salad. As a matter of fact, you know what I think I'm going to do? We're going to steer away from the horrors of society, because whenever I present this segment, I do tell you there's always a chance that I bring you something positive. And I don't know if this is positive or negative. It's probably more positive than negative, but it's also neutral too. But at least it shows that we're regaining a little bit of our sanity here. Because Victoria's Secret, for a long time, was synonymous with lingerie. Made great lingerie. Teenage boys would always walk past the Victoria's Secret store, peeking in as they're walking by. They're not necessarily trying to go in on their own, but they're peeking in to see if there's a lingerie show happening in the back. And by teenage boys, I mean me when I was a teenager. Yeah, I was an idiot. Like to think I've gotten a little bit smarter since then, and less, while becoming less of a horn dog. But at some point in the last decade, things really changed for Victoria's Secret as they got caught up. They got swept up in the belief that everything needs to be 100% equal. Which is a cute idealistic idea, but the reality is it's complete BS. So what did that mean? It meant that around 5 years ago, they completely canceled their runway show, which is a big reason why Victoria's Secret got on the map to begin with. That was after a series of scandals and backlash from critics who slammed the brand for lacking diversity and inclusivity. That's right, diversity and inclusivity, because they were marching out skinny, attractive models with big boobs. That's the bottom line. Is that diverse? How are we defining diverse here? By different ethnic makeups? Because I feel like they did a pretty good job of that. No, diversity meant different body types. You being inclusive enough to women who should be free to wear whatever they want in the comfort of their own homes in terms of some of those undergarments, but should they be a part of runway shows? Well, when they were dealt that criticism, they essentially said, you know what, you're right, we're going to cancel this whole thing because it's just not worth it at this point. In the meantime, they started bringing overweight models aboard. Men who identified as women aboard as their Victoria's Secret models. There was a model with Down syndrome at some point in the last 5 years. You know what? Good for each of those people for getting theirs at that point in time. But Victoria's Secret, it looks like they've actually rethought some things, because they did announce that their hallmark catwalk is going to return this fall after a 5-year hiatus. And they're promising glamour, music, and yes, a return of models wearing wings. Company wrote on Instagram earlier today, "We read the comments and heard you. The show, the lingerie brand shared, will, quote, reflect who we are today, presumably hinting at a total overhaul of their shows from years past. So say, maybe we will get some of those overweight, trans, and special needs models as a part of the catwalk. And I think that will be an entertaining part of things as well. That is it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow at 6. That includes a multi-segment conversation with the hilarious actor TJ, with the hilarious TJ Miller. He is a stand-up comedian and actor that you know from everything from Silicon Valley to Deadpool and more. He's going to be here in town performing stand-up this weekend. We're going to talk about comedy and more coming up with TJ Miller. In the meantime, though, thank you so much for tuning in to today's show. Back tomorrow at 6. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elliott.